Good morning. Welcome to the Twin Cities. Before I get started, I just want to acknowledge my co-authors, Brian Palak with the Forest Service and the Northern Research Station up in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, Tony D'Amato at the University of Vermont, formerly at the University of Minnesota. And today I'm talking about the 20-year soil response to organic matter manipulation, with the organic matter, of course, being all this material that exists following harvesting, like you see in this picture, variously referred to as harvest residues, logging debris, biomass, and so on. And looking at the response of soil carbon and nitrogen and also discussing it in context of perhaps some implications for assessment and application. All right, so in forest soil management, kind of one of our primary objectives, at least within the context of traditional forestry and fiber production, is to maintain just the ability of soil to function with regards to plant resource supply, most notably water and nutrient supply. And so a lot of effort has been placed on trying to assess, when we go from something like an intact forest as shown on this picture on the left to post-harvest conditions as shown on the right, what happens to soil with regards to its ability to provide those functions. In particular, looking at the role that soil organic matter and changes in porosity, how those can be influenced by management and potentially impact soil. And so a huge effort's been put into place trying to assess this over many decades. And as many of you are probably familiar with, one of the biggest and most comprehensive efforts to assess this has been the long-term soil productivity network. This is a network of sites across North America in both the United States and Canada that has a common experimental design that's been applied to sites where we have increasing levels of organic matter removal, increasing levels of soil compaction that, as hypothesized, should result in reductions in site productivity. So this network's been in place for over 20 years now, and today I'm going to talk just briefly about the Lake States Aspen sites, which are some of the earliest installations in Minnesota and in the upper and lower peninsula of Michigan. And just want to note as well, I'm just focusing exclusively on organic matter manipulation and not assessing soil compaction. Okay, so the sites were established in consecutive years starting in 1992. Harvest ages are pretty similar to what we use for rotation in Aspen at two of the sites, the Ottawa and Chippewa installations, harvested about 60 and 70 years old, respectively. But the Huron installation, the lower peninsula of Michigan, was quite a bit lower, 35 years. The big thing I want you to take away from this slide in terms of differences among sites is that we had strong contrasting soil textures amongst them. So at the Ottawa installation, was a clay soil texture. The Chippewa installation was silt loam. And the Huron installation was a sandy soil texture. And of course, then, site index varied with that as well. So it was highest at the Chippewa installation with a silt loam texture, intermediate at the Huron site, and the lowest at the Ottawa site. Okay, for those of you who aren't familiar with this design, we had three manipulations that were applied at each of the site. We had full replication within site. First one being the bowl-only treatment, which had the most organic matter retention, where trees were processed at the stump, all unmerchantable material was retained and distributed within the general harvest area. The whole tree treatment, which is intermediate organic matter removal treatment, where material was brought, trees were brought back to the landing and then processed, so a lot of the unmerchantable tops and limbs were not retained on site. And then this extreme kind of organic matter removal treatment, where the forest floor was removed in addition to the all the woody debris that remained after harvesting. So you can see the upper left-hand picture, a real Herculean effort. I can imagine going out with rakes and actually removing the forest floor at these relatively large experimental plots, such that at the end of the treatment application, there's essentially no pre-treatment organic matter, above-ground organic matter remaining. And then lastly, I'll point out for here we have control stands. Some of the LTSP installations have control stands. There hasn't been a lot of reporting on those stands. Today I'll show you a little bit of data from those. And we use those as a reference. No harvest or management activities occurred within them. Soil sampling was done both pre- and post-treatment every 5 years. I'm just doing decadal results today, but they were also sampled at 5 and 15 years as well. Sampling was always done with a volumetric core sampler to 30 centimeter depth. And we were lucky enough over the 20-year period to have the same technician do all of the sampling. John Elioff has done all that work over the last 20 years. See, there are mineral soils, less than 2 millimeter fine fraction was analyzed. They were separated back in the lab and then analyzed for total carbon and nitrogen by dry combustion. Okay, so just get the primary finding out of the way right away. There was no significant difference among treatments at any of the sites. This is in no differences in soil carbon nitrogen concentrations, total nitrogen carbon content, or in C-to-N ratios. No differences. But we'll look at them in a little bit more detail anyways. So starting with mineral soil carbon. What I've done here is I've calculated the absolute change in soil carbon mass in the top 30 centimeters of soil for the 2 millimeter fine fraction. So anything that's a positive value is an absolute gain over time. Anything that's a negative value is an absolute loss. Just a few things to point out. In general, it appears that soil carbon is increasing over the 20-year time period. In some cases, by a quite large amount. If you look at the silt loam textured chipil installation, we have very high increases of soil carbon over a 20-year period. Intermediate at the clay textured Ottawa installation, and then lowest at the sandy textured Huron installation. The controls generally tend to respond in the same manner. Maybe a little bit different at the clay textured site, where we had a decrease in soil carbon in the control treatment in the first 10 years, followed by an increase, but they generally respond in the same manner. The big thing I want to point out with this is that these increases were very, very large. So at the silt loam textured site, we had an increase of over 130% compared to pre-treatment, so more than a doubling of soil carbon in the top 30 centimeters of soil. Clay site was 30%, and then at the sandy textured site, it was 12%. Very large increases. Mineral soil nitrogen, not surprisingly, given how intricately linked carbon and nitrogen are, responses were very similar. Again, very largest at the silt loam textured site, intermediate at the clay soil textured site, and then lowest at the sandy soil textured site. Again, very large increases. The one thing I will point out here, that there was no significant differences, of course, amongst treatments, but there's trends. You know, at the sandy soil textured site, it kind of follows our common conceptual framework where the increases were greatest, where most organic, or the largest amount of organic matter was retained, compared to lowest, where the forest floor removal treatment occurred. But you could look at the clay textured site, and exactly the opposite occurred there. So I'll have to take away from that. All right, so there's been a lot of work done on this, right? We're all probably familiar with it. There's been a lot of manuscripts, papers from all of the scientists who have been involved with LTSP over the years. And most of those paper findings have concluded that there's generally limited effects of organic matter removal on soil properties and on plant growth. And if there was effects, that it's generally limited and site-specific, can depend upon site-specific characteristics. And our findings generally support that. It's hard to conclude otherwise, with no difference between the extreme forest floor removal treatment and the bowl-only organic matter retention treatment. But I think there are some issues, and I just want to take a few minutes to discuss them. So the first is related to those large increases in soil carbon and nitrogen that we saw over the 20-year period. So what I have here is plotted out in the control stands. So these are the stands that were unmanaged, unharvested. Bulk density over the 20-year period and soil carbon concentrations over the 20-year period. You can see bulk densities decreasing over that time frame, and soil carbon concentrations are increasing. To me, when I look at this, this seems like a pretty clear signal that forest floor is being incorporated into the mineral soil sample pool. Forest floor generally having much lower soil bulk densities, much higher soil carbon concentrations. If that material was incorporated in, then we'd expect the mineral soil sample to take on those characteristics as well. I don't exactly know why this is. Sampling bias is always a likely culprit. Of course, we had the same technician over the 20-year period, so maybe that's less likely. We do have evidence of earthworm invasion at all three of these sites. So non-native European and Asian species of earthworms that consume the forest floor, mix it into the mineral soil, could be driving some of this. Could be something related to succession, which is stand dynamics at this point in stand development. And as we all know, truly, it could be almost anything else. I don't really have good evidence for any one of those. And part of the reason why I don't is that at these LTSP installations, these Lake States Aspen installations, we focus primarily on one soil fraction, this 2 millimeter fine fraction. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Mostly just historically, that's what we do. We focus on the 2 millimeter fine fraction. But there's been a lot of work that's shown, not just within mineral soil fractions, like greater than 2 millimeters, but other pieces of soil ecosystem pools of carbon and nitrogen clearly contribute a lot to the change within that 2 millimeter fraction. So without having an idea of what's occurring in those other pools, it's really difficult to assess whether or not changes within the 2 millimeter pool are practical or realistic. And in particular, I think with LTSP and for the Aspen sites in general, that below ground decomposition of organic matter, structural organic matter such as roots and stumps, is probably a big piece that plays into some of these changes. But we haven't really assessed it to any great deal detail yet, as of yet. The last piece, in terms of trying to assess whether or not these practices are sustainable, long-term, multi-rotation, is just pointing out the obvious that we're sampling to 30 centimeters depth. I have up here one of Rob Harrison's papers, who always leads the charge on reminding us that deep soils contribute large amounts of nutrient carbon to total pools. And you know, we'll probably hear a bit more about this later today. I know the following talk discusses this as well. But I'm just pointing out that if you know, the 30 centimeter depth, I'm sure there's great reasons for why it was done. I'm sure it was related with resource limitations in terms of sampling intensity and the fact that it's probably the most likely portion of the profile to show changes following treatment. But if we can't assess what amount is being contributed from lower depths in the soil profile below 30 centimeters, we'll always be second guessing and wondering whether or not these practices are truly sustainable with time. All right, so just kind of putting it all together, I do think that these decadal results indicate low potential for negative impacts on soil carbon and nitrogen pools to a depth of 30 centimeters in the 2 millimeter fine fraction. I think our results, generally it's hard to conclude otherwise, especially comparing those extreme organic matter manipulations. I do have considerable uncertainty in the long-term response for those reasons that I just identified, and I'm not sure really how large that uncertainty is. You know, we could always go back and maybe measure deeper pools. You know, post-hoc, go back and measure those. We could go back and measure different fractions. But without having pre-treatment data on those, it'll be very challenging to attribute the effects of these experimental manipulations on changes in those components. Of course, we have the vegetation response, which will probably be more informative. We'll hear a little bit more about that this afternoon in the special session, not just at these sites, but at other LTSP installations as well. And maybe in many regards, that's even more powerful. You know, they act like phytometers, kind of just rolling all of the effects in, and then we can measure directly with vegetation, which is generally much easier to measure than soil. But there's the possibility that this will have limited utility, ultimately, in application, that if we can't tie changes within the vegetation to what's occurring within soil, it'll be real difficult to translate those into operational recommendations. And then lastly, you know, these are the some of the earliest sites where we're 2 decades in terms of response, but LTSP continues on. More of these sites will get older and older, and I think it's likely that at these installations and others, other projects that tend to be issues with long-term sampling, as we're showing with some of these issues with the incorporation of the forest floor into the mineral soil pool. I'm just highlighting the challenges in assessing soil change over time. Okay, I really just have to acknowledge, in addition to all of the scientists who were involved with the inception of LTSP and who has gotten it to the point where it is today, specifically for these installations, Doug Stone was a huge driver in having those installations established, and also involved with the inception of the conceptual framework for LTSP. John Elioff, who did a lot of the work in terms of establishing and the sampling. And then in recent years, Josh Cragthorpe, Valia Kirst, and Doug Kasnick have also contributed substantially to keeping these sites going. And with that, I'll take any questions if I have a few moments. Yeah, Jim, absolutely it could. The data for the bulk density in the soil carbon was from the control stands, so there's not a lot of resprouting occurring in there. They are getting much older, and the stand is converting. You know, they're about anywhere from 80 to 90 years in age now. But certainly within the manipulations themselves, absolutely. And that's the big piece. I was trying to make the case that if we're not measuring what's happening with those pools, it's tough to evaluate how much they're contributing to change within soil.
So it wasn't part of the universal protocol to measure
No, it absolutely was, and I had, even for these instances, I had hoped to have our cation data ready for this talk, but there's still we're reanalyzing archive samples to make sure.
That was going to be my other question, are the samples archived?
Yeah.
So is there a universal protocol for that?
I'm not sure. I know at these installations they're widely they are archived in climate controlled rooms. So. And it's been powerful because when we look at some of our older data and compare them, if you've never done that, it's kind of disheartening when we look at what the error just within the analytical instruments and the methods. I mean, we already have the challenges in trying to assess soil with all the variation within it. When you put the analytical variability on top of that, you wonder why we even try sometimes.